Sondheim is difficult to analyze, not because he's actually difficult to analyze, but because there's actually so much and so much richness and depth in all of his songs, both lyrics and music, that you can kind of talk forever about any song that you analyze. So I've chosen one that is 1 minute and 25 seconds long on purpose, because even in this 1 minute and 25 seconds, you get a really nuanced portrait of both characters who are participating in it, and it shifts both of their trajectories in ways that are really immensely important for the show. Just in this little tiny snippet of song that at first glance seems like it's not perhaps super full of depth, but you'd be wrong to think that, and I'll show you why. So, if you'd like to listen to the song before we start, I'm not going to play it in full. I will play little chunks of it. So, if you want to pause now and go and listen to A Very Nice Prince, which is a part of a triple track if you go to the original Broadway cast recording, so you can listen to it for about 1 minute and 30 seconds. You can pause here, go listen to the song, and come back. If you don't want to do that and you want to just keep on going, let's dive in. So, this song happens midway through the first act. We've already gone into the woods, some stuff has already happened. This song is Cinderella and the Baker's Wife. Cinderella has already gone to the grave of her mother, gotten the dress that she's going to wear to the ball. She's already had the birds help her out with the first trial. She's gone off to the ball. She's run away from the ball into the woods, being chased by the prince, run into almost literally the baker's wife, who is there helping out the baker with his quest, with their quest, I should say, to find the elements they need to break the spell. It's not yet the first midnight, so it's still sort of in the beginning of things, but we already know who these characters are, and we know a little bit about them already. So this is the song that happens right after the prince has come and asked the baker's wife if she has seen Cinderella. The baker's wife has lied and said she has not, pretty much. So then the baker's wife has asked Cinderella what the prince is like, and this is the answer.
He's a very nice prince, and it's a very nice ball, and when I entered, they trumpeted, and the prince, oh, the prince?
Yes, the prince.
Well, he's tall.
All right, so here right away, we have some very fun and interesting stuff. Even the instrumental at the beginning of this, before this has properly started, tells us a little bit about what we're about to see. There are two major elements in the orchestration, which is by Jonathan Tunick, who frequently does the orchestration for Sondheim shows. We've got this sort of plodding, repetitive piano part that's repeating but staying contained, and the buzzing strings that are kind of coiled with tension underneath. So even though we don't quite know it yet, we're hearing an instrumentational representation of each of these characters. Cinderella, who's going to have to be kind of searching around for what she's saying, is in that piano part, which is kind of hitting those same notes again and again. And it's a little bit scattered, but not really. It's more contained, but it's a little bit all over the place, right? And then the baker's wife, who's just cannot wait to hear everything about the prince, about this ball, is like those strings. She's just waiting. She just can't wait to hear about all that happened to this night. So we already have something there. And then, of course, we have Cinderella's answer, which is the beginning of the song, because we're diving right in here. He's a very nice prince. He's a very nice prince. It's the perfect answer because it's about as pedestrian as you can get, right? She's talking about a prince, the prince of the land. She's gone to a ball. We all know this story. Everybody at the ball has been blown away by her, including her stepmother and her wicked stepsister. She's just taken the world by storm, and she's gotten what she wanted, right? We saw her in that first scene she had with her mother at the grave, saying, "I want this more than anything, more than life, more than the moon." And now she's kind of talking about it like it was a book club meeting, right? Nice is such a sort of weak word in terms of feeling things. Oh, it's nice is kind of damning with faint praise. So it's funny right off the bat because they're undercutting our expectations to such a degree. But it also tells us a lot about Cinderella because previously we've known that she's virtuous and kind and deserving. But this is actually a glimpse into her personality as it's forming. We're really watching her discover this stuff. She's practical and she's not really ultimately super impressed by the stuff that she found at the ball, right? she wasn't knocked away by any of this. This is just what she can say about it. He's a very nice prince, right? And nice is slightly elevated there, that note, nice prince. But again, it's not, we know that she's not feeling that this is an amazing, this is not a, an amazing high note for her. It's something much more reasonable. But in contrast, of course, the baker's wife is totally different. She's the one who we've seen to be practical. We've thought that she was the one who was much more down to earth, but she's aching for this gossip. She wants to hear every detail about the prince. And their exchange here is hilarious because you can feel how frustrated the baker's wife is at Cinderella being totally unable to describe anything well enough, right? All the baker's wife wants is all the details. She wants a description of everything in that room. She wants endless descriptions about the prince. She wants to know everything about the prince. But Cinderella is just giving her this very pedestrian, not very exciting account of what happened at the ball. So it's so funny right off the bat, but we're also learning a lot. And Sondheim's done a very clever thing here by saying, by having the repeated and. You know, it would be funny alone if the baker's wife was saying and, you know, nudging Cinderella for this stuff. But the fact that Cinderella says it back really shows you how much Cinderella, this is not on Cinderella's mind, right? She's not really running through every detail of the ball in the way that we know the baker's wife probably would be. When she's prompted with and, she repeats it, indicating that she's kind of like filling time before she can find the answers. She's reaching for these answers. It's not only not on her mind, it's something she has to kind of go searching for. She's not really thinking about it at all. It's really playing with our expectations even more and makes for both a really funny scene song, but also telling us how she's feeling about it. And I love in this original cast recording, this is Kim Crosby playing Cinderella, and Joanna Gleason, of course, is the baker's wife. Before she has the line, "When I entered, they trumpeted," she has this little intake of breath. That's what's exciting to her. They trumpeted for her. That's fun, you know? Which is funny because we know that the baker's wife doesn't want the details of the trumpeting. She wants the prince and the prince. Oh, the prince, right? Again, Cinderella is not even thinking about the prince. Oh, right, the prince. The prince was there. Well, he's tall. That's all she can say about this handsome prince, right? Which is great. And of course, we've just seen the prince. So not only is it a detail about the prince that's not very exciting at all, it's a detail we don't even need because the baker's wife just saw him. She knows that he's tall.
Is that all? Did you dance? Is he charming? They say that he's charming. We did nothing but dance. Yes. And it made a nice change.
Oh, the prince.
Oh, the prince.
Yes, the prince.
He has charm for a prince, I guess. I don't meet a wide range.
So, and we're going back to this. We sort of have a repetition of this first chunk. And again, we're having the same problem. The baker's wife is trying again, right? Tell me more, tell me more, tell me more. And Cinderella really can't give her that much more. We can sense in her line, "We did nothing but dance." The way that it sounds in the music, it sounds a little bit like Cinderella was kind of bored by doing nothing but dancing. This was not really that exciting for her, ultimately. And certainly not in a blasé way, not in a, I wish there was something new, but there's something kind of bittersweet about it, right? I think she's discovering in this song how much this isn't that exciting for her. She didn't know this before. This is a surprise to her that she didn't have the experience at the ball that she thought she was going to. This is not the same character that we saw earlier who wanted this more than the moon, more than jewels, more than anything, right? This was her dream to go to this festival, to go to this ball. And now she's gone to the ball and we can hear in these kind of small contained melody that it really wasn't blowing her mind in the way that I think she thought it would. So it's a discovery. It's nothing she knew, but it's also nothing she really wants to talk about that much. And then of course we have that amazing line, which I love so much. He has charm for a prince, I guess. And the baker's wife is growing here. She's not getting the answer she wants. And she's realizing that she can't just ask Cinderella. She can't just prompt Cinderella. So she's giving her more, right? Is he charming? They say that he's charming. And Cinderella makes the very good, very logical point about, I don't meet a wide range, right? They're shifting here. The practical baker's wife is the one who's becoming the dreamer more and more. And Cinderella, who was so much the dreamer, who had these big metaphors with, you know, I want it more than anything, more than the moon, is the one who's becoming surprisingly logical here, right? She can't really comment on whether the prince is charming. She doesn't have a lot to compare it to, right? That's a very funny thing to say. It doesn't really matter how many princes you've met to be compared against. You can probably say if someone's charming, but for her, it's not really enough, right? She has a brain that needs to put things in its place that way. And also it's underlining yet again that she was not really blown away by this prince who she's been running away from. So, you know, this is not a surprise for us. And then we shift into something else here.
Did he bow? Was he cold and polite? And it's all very strange. Did you speak? Did he flirt? Could you tell right away he was royalty? Is he sensitive, clever, well-mannered, considerate, passionate, charming, as kind as he's handsome, as wise as he's rich? Is he everything you've ever wanted?
I know.
Okay, so here we have something which is interesting. So after I don't meet a wide range, we get the baker's wife, and she's switching into this dreamscape. She's kind of like gone off into this world of, did he bow? Was he cold and polite? Did he flirt? Could you tell right away he was royalty? She's populating this in her mind without the help of Cinderella, right? She's not actually getting an imagination fiesta from Cinderella. So she's just doing it herself. She's going off on her daydreams. Did he speak? Did he flirt? Could you tell what right away he was royalty, right? This is kind of, it sounds like a girl with a crush to some degree. But Cinderella's off in her own reverie here. She's shifted from the conversational Cinderella that she was before, who had to be kind of prompted with everything, right? And wasn't giving the baker's wife a ton, to the line, and it's all very strange. She's now starting to think of this for herself. That line is kind of for herself as much as it is for the baker's wife. It's all very strange. We don't really know what that refers to here. It could be a few different things. It's just super bizarre that this girl who was basically a servant in the house is in a beautiful ball gown, and she went to a ball and the prince danced with her all night. Sure, that's very surreal, but I think she's also talking here about her own reaction to this, right? She's just said, I don't meet a wide range of princes. And it's all very strange, right? It's strange to her that she's having this reaction to this particular event, that she didn't find that getting this dream come true was actually a dream come true. And then we're going to build on this in this moment here. I'm going to back it up slightly so you can hear this again.
As wise as he's rich, is he everything you've ever wanted?
I know.
Well, I know. But how can you know what you want till you get what you want and you see if you like it?
What I know.
All I know is
I never wish.
What I want most of
just
all
just for that reason
is to know what I want. When you know you can't have what you want, where's the profit in wishing?
Okay, so then we get this very packed, dense little section that has a lot of information. So, and I should also mention before I move on, this great thing that Sondheim has done where the baker's wife, her reverie about what he is he handsome and charm, clever, well-mannered, considerate, kind, is he handsome? That, of course, this it's building into this rapture, right? She's just overwhelmed. This is coming so fast. He's just the dreamiest here, building to this. Is he everything you've ever wanted? And of course, this is the exact same thing that the prince is going to sing about himself later in agony, which is really clever because not only do we have a sort of sense of what that world is, that all the women dream of this prince in this way, and he's very aware of that. He agrees with them that he is all of these things. They're also dropping in this kind of setup for what happens in the second act, that the baker's wife thinks of the prince the way that he thinks people should think of him because he is all of these things. Cinderella does not, which is partially why he's so drawn to her, right? We know that she's kind of hard to get because she doesn't think of him like this. She doesn't have this sort of explosion of reverie about how handsome and wonderful she is. She's kind of not convinced. So there's a nice thing there about why the prince and Cinderella are kind of drawn to each other, or why the prince is drawn to Cinderella, really. I think it's kind of clear that Cinderella is never really that interested in the prince, besides knowing that she sort of should be because she's the peasant maiden who, and he's the prince. But also that we have the Easter egg of why the baker's wife is going to have this tryst with him in the second act, because we know that she has this kind of crush on him. And also just how the prince usually interacts with women. This is the usual reaction that he gets from women. They usually fall all over themselves to be with him. Cinderella does not. You know, there's a lot going on in that moment. And then, of course, at the end of that line, she has, "Is he everything you've ever wanted?" With this is probably the most feeling full, rapturous line in this entire song section, right? It just this high note, "Everything you've ever wanted." That's what a prince is, right? Everything you've ever wanted. And Cinderella, and these lyrics are a little bit hard to hear because they're also Sondheimian and clever, which is everything Sondheim writes is so smart on so many levels. But to that, Cinderella says, "Would I know?" She doesn't know if that's everything she's ever wanted, right? She doesn't really know what she wants yet. That's what she's discovering in this moment, in this song, right? And the baker says, "Well, I know." She doesn't have that same problem. She's more mature, perhaps more sure of herself, but also they're coming from different parts of life, right? The baker's wife has more imagination and maybe is just less careful than Cinderella or less philosophical than Cinderella. It's easier for the baker's wife to say, "That's everything I've ever wanted," right? But Cinderella's developing already in this little chunk here into someone a lot more complex than the person that she was before, right? She doesn't feel comfortable saying that that's everything she's ever wanted. And then we're going to build upon that, because Cinderella, who's been kind of removed in the beginning of the song and just sort of answering the baker's wife questions with these almost passive, like, "It's all very nice," right, is suddenly really engaged with this discussion when she's driving the building melody here with what she says, which is, "But how do you know what you want till you get what you want and you see if you like it," right? Mirroring what the baker's wife, the melody she's just said about the prince. But her passion is, "How do you know what you want until you get it and then you see if you like it," right? This is a new thought for Cinderella, but it's something that is going to define her, really. That's her realization, and it's coming halfway through the first act, so she's going to have others. But sometimes what you want, you can't really know if it's what you want until you get it and you see if that's really what you want. And interestingly enough, it mirrors what her mother said at the grave, which is, "Are you sure what you wish is what you want?" Right? What Cinderella has discovered here is that what she wished is maybe not what she wanted. But it's a complex place for this character to be. And then after she says that, "How can you know what you want till you get what you want and you see if you like it?" the baker's wife says, "Would I know?" That's her chance to say that. So just as she said, is the handsome prince everything you've ever wanted? And Cinderella said, "Well, would I know?" because she doesn't know what she wants. Now the baker's wife, in answer to that question, "How do you know what you want until you get what you want and you see if you like it?" the baker's wife says, "Would I know?" And what she means by that is what she expounds on. "I never wish, just within reason," and then says, "When you know you can't have what you want, where's the profit in wishing?" So this is a tremendously complex little moment for the baker's wife, who previously to this moment we've seen as someone who seems happy with her life, with the exception of the child she cannot have with the baker. That's what she's set out to find in the woods. But now we're getting something a lot more complicated than that. "How can you know what you want till you get what you want and you see if you like it? Would I know?" She says, "I don't wish, just within reason. When you know you can't have what you want, where's the profit in wishing?" Right? She's basically saying here, I can't say that that's a good philosophy because I never get what I want. I don't wish for things because I know I won't get them, right? And she says it in this really interesting way. "When you know you can't have, what's the profit in wishing? Where's the profit in wishing?" Which obviously reminds us of who she is. She's a peasant. She's a baker's wife. She lives a sort of contained life that doesn't feel like it has a lot of opportunities to go to balls and dream big, really. As opposed to Cinderella, who's in this kind of counterpoint to this, even though they're both sort of in their own worlds here, figuring out this stuff for themselves. Cinderella says, "All I know is what I want most of all is to know what I want." So they've both really shifted in this little tiny 1 minute and 25 seconds worth of song here. The baker's wife has gone from someone who seemed very grounded, very practical, happy, settled in her marriage. Her dreams, although they were having trouble being achieved because of this curse, were fairly reasonable. She wants to have a child, right? But what we've learned from her in this little section of song is that she actually is much more imaginative, much more romantic, and that she's a little bit frustrated with part of her life. She wishes she could dream bigger, but she doesn't really allow herself to because she knows she's not going to get it, right? There's something very sort of bittersweet about that. Whereas Cinderella, who we met as this dreamer, has now shifted to being the opposite. She's gotten what she thought she wished for and has suddenly realized, or not suddenly, over the course of the song, realized that it's not that simple, that she has to have gone to this ball and gotten her wish, ostensibly, to realize that maybe that's not what she wants. And that the bigger, scarier thing for her is that she doesn't really know what she wants. So she's not really at the point of realizing that this is not what she wants yet. She's only at the beginning of that realization. She's toeing the water. But I think we can tell here in her melody line and in the way that she's framing this that it's ultimately not going to be what she really wants in her life. But she's finding that she's discovering herself, and she's discovering that she's really logical and she's really practical in a way that we didn't realize she were. So they've in essence switched places over the course of this song. That of course is going to be key for them going off into where they go in the second act. When Cinderella leaves the palace, she has that great line at the end about my father's house was a nightmare, the prince's house was a dream, I want something in between. She's going to really find her own path, walk her own path, choose her own life, even if it's something that seems ridiculous to the people around her, because who wouldn't want to be in a palace with a prince and be a princess? And the baker's wife is going to do something that might otherwise seem out of character for her, which is to have an affair with the prince, a brief affair, certainly not like an emotional affair. It's just really a tryst with the prince when we think she's happy with the baker. But we've seen here the seeds have been planted of a discontent and a crush that she has and a longing for something a little bit beyond her happy life, which really has nothing to do with her unhappiness in her marriage or in her life, but it has everything to do with her being someone who has dreams a little bit beyond her scale, a little bit of beyond the boundaries of her current life. And then we get this beautiful line at the very end. Here we go.
He's a very nice prince.
And of course, it's the exact same line as the first line of this song with the same melody, almost, except for it ends on a much more unsettled note. They're both singing the same thing, but we know it means different things. For Cinderella, he's a very nice prince sounds a little disappointed, right? Sounds a little bit like she's thinking about the fact that he's nice, but maybe he's not more than that. And analyzing her own feelings about that there, or realizing her own feelings after she said this thing about what I wish I knew what I wanted, right? It's kind of that same midline damning with faint praise. And for the baker's wife, it feels a lot more wistful, right? He's a very nice prince. She can't really allow herself to dream, but she does dream a little bit of the prince, even if she knows that it's unlikely and impossible. So it's wistful for both of them, but for very, very different reasons. And it's really just the fact that the song doesn't end there. Then the baker's wife spots Cinderella's shoe, the beanstalk happens. This isn't even a real complete song unto itself. It's just a little piece of this. But we've gotten so far over the course of this and learned so much about these two characters who we now know a lot better than we did before. And that's really what's possible in these musicals, especially with Sondheim, who's so complex. He's so psychologically complex. And the portraits that he paints of his characters in the songs, with the music, with the lyrics, with their interaction is just as deep, in fact, perhaps a little more so than what can be done in scenes, because it's given this music. So you can hear in this music how unexcited Cinderella is by her account of the ball. You can hear how excited the baker's wife is to hear all of this. And the prince, how much bigger that music is for her than it is for Cinderella. So there's really so much that's been achieved here in this little section, in which it doesn't seem like much plot stuff has actually happened, right? It's a conversation between these two characters from different stories about how the ball was okay, right? And yet we know so much more. So it's just another example of how brilliant Sondheim is. And one of the interesting things about this song too, is that a lot of this ended up being cut. It's on the original cast recording, but it's not in the published script now, which is such an interesting statement about how good Sondheim's stuff is, that even something like this, even something so rich, can end up on the cutting room floor.